it's 9 o'clock here in the Garden Island of Kauai, and it's now time for a new program we have on KKCR, and it's Talk Story Radio, and we're doing some land stories, farming and culture on Kauai, and we'll be talking with Angela Zussman from storyforall.org, and we have a really interesting interview today, pre-recorded interview, but we're going to talk a little bit with Angela about her project as well. Story for All is a great organization that talks to people about their stories and their areas, and Talk Story Radio wants to bring that alive for Kauai. We want to tell stories about what's happening on Kauai with our land, agriculturally, regular old culturally, and how we can best preserve it and do it. And now I want to bring Angela on the phone. Are you there with us?
Hello, good morning.
Oh, awesome. So glad you're here. Thank you for joining us here on KKCR this morning. It's the last Friday of the month, and I know we've got some cool stuff to share. So what, first of all, before we start off, tell us a little bit about Story for All.
Awesome. Story for All is a nonprofit. We do community storytelling projects with the goal of especially focusing on voices in communities that have been historically marginalized. So really wanting to create a safe place for people to get to share their truth, share their stories and their wisdom, and then reflect it back out to the wider community in ways that promote understanding and healing and inform policy.
I think that that's very special. And I know that you've been pretty active on the south side of Kauai, which is traditionally like I'm up in Princeville right now. And so I want to tell stories that are all over Kauai, and we get all over the world via our app and our website and everything. So I think it's a really special opportunity for KKCR to be able to share these stories as well. What are the types of things that you're interested in when you're telling the stories?
Well, first of all, you know, I founded Story for All a long time ago to promote healing through storytelling. So the very first thing we want is to be doing storytelling in ways that are very ethical and very respectful. There's a great Maya Angelou quote, "There is no greater burden than an untold story." So I think I just paraphrased that. I might have mangled it a little bit. Sorry, Maya Angelou.
Sorry, Maya.
The point is that we have so much wisdom, so many stories inside of us, and especially for communities that have been marginalized, whose voices have been silenced or whose narratives have sort of been overtaken, it's especially important to provide them with a forum to share their stories and to be heard and seen for who they are. So that's really where we're coming from. And then just trying to present the stories in ways that everyone can really relate to and understand, because that is truly the power of storytelling. You know, once we know someone's story, we can feel a sense of connection with them. And I think that that's really what we need in our world today. So storytelling to heal the world, ultimately.
I love it. Let's storytelling to hear the world. That's so good. I forgot the word that you used just now that really, really like got me, like, oh, not overlooked, but overtaken even. And how I just, on Kauai, I always get the sense that it used to move so slowly, and now we're moving faster and faster, and we just keep getting quicker all the time. And I feel like these old stories, these old ways of life, these old connections to place have really been overtaken with our schedules and our franticness. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm too frantic.
But. I think, no, you're definitely not alone. I mean, that's one of the things that I appreciate so much about Hawaiian culture is there's a culture of talk story here. You know, that's something that is valued enough that there's a phrase for it and people make time for it. And so that's something that we're hoping to help protect, right, and reignite. We should be making time to talk story, to listen to one another, maybe not so frantically.
I do think that's true. In your storytelling and in the And this is a totally off topic question, but I was thinking personally, like in my family a lot, we have stories that we don't talk about because they're somehow historically shameful. In your storytelling, do you come up against that? And do people respond to that? And are they willing to tell them? Or is it right to share all the things outright? I don't know really what my question is, but it's like a very, it's a weird bit, you know. This is probably not the, like,
it's
on air on the radio.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I mean, I totally hear what you're saying. I do a lot of personal history also for families, and I come across this a lot, even in my own family. The first the first family history I did was my own family, and you know, discovered that we may have another whole branch of our family that no one wants to talk about.
Okay.
So,
uh-huh.
you know, So whether it's, you know, personal indiscretions or, you know, historical wrongs, you know, everybody's got something in their closet, and families, you know, for sure. And of course, if we expand out to the macro level, then societies or cultures, you know, have a lot of terrible things, perhaps, that they've perpetuated or been traumatized by. So you do have to be careful. I mean, I'm not trying to force, you know, we're not really trying to force anyone. That's the thing. Like, this is about healing. And sometimes people really want to let go of that burden of the untold story. Sometimes people want to be able to speak out loud that which hasn't been said. So I think it's important to create the space for that and be respectful. As an oral historian, your role is to be neutral.
Yes.
So you're not there to judge. You're not there to argue or, you know, try to make your point of view heard. Your role is really to just to gently but diligently pull out the story. So I take that seriously as an oral historian. I've certainly interviewed people who said things that I didn't agree with or that maybe were distasteful, but it wasn't my job to argue with them in that moment.
Right.
The purpose is to let the story be told. And then once the story is told, documented, then, you know, we can figure out what to do with it. But the first goal is to let the stories be told as people are ready to share them. And, you know, sometimes people are more willing to speak with a stranger than they would to a family member. And sometimes they don't want to speak at all. And, you know, I respect them. There's also, you know, the World War II generation, there was part of that culture was really not to speak about a lot of the horrors that they experienced. So there's a lot of stories that haven't been told and passed down in generations because of that. So, we feel a little bit of a sense of urgency sometimes to get the stories from the World War II generation while we still can.
That was kind of exactly what I was thinking about, like how just some things that my grandparents don't talk about, you know, and I go, what are they, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, it's now too late, and then to try to pull it out of my dad, you know, like, it's different. Anyhow, my parents aren't listening right now, I think. So,
I would say give them the opportunity. Yeah, you never want to force it. I never want to force it, but I do want to create the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes maybe they would feel more comfortable writing it down, and then maybe they don't share it. Maybe they burn it. But again, there is that burden sometimes, that secret or that knowledge that's burning a hole inside the soul, so to speak, and it can be healed in various ways. So I would say to people listening, you know, write it down maybe and burn it, you know, but let it out somehow.
Yeah, I also love your project for its qualities for healing and for learning as well. And especially for those of us that are residents here on Kauai, but we weren't born here, to learn about our the place where we live is so valuable and important and needed. So tell us about what we'll be hearing today. It's an interview with Llewellyn Kauhelauli'i, and we're talking about Kaneoluma He'iau. Tell us a little bit about this interview.
I'm so excited to be able to share this interview with your listeners. You know, it's just, this was a very powerful interview. Uncle Billy, as he is known, is the po'o, or the leader. You know, he's the president, so to speak, of Kaneoluma. Mm-hmm. It's his family's land that this he'iao and this ancient Hawaiian village is on. And for generations, his family has cared for this land and cared for this sacred site. And you can really feel in his words, I'm pretty sure it's going to transmit across the radio waves, you can feel the honor and the responsibility, the kuleana, that he has to Malama, the land, on behalf of the, you know, previous generations of his family, and hoping to move that forward to future generations of his family. So listening between the lines, I mean, kind of feeling the energy of what he's saying, I was profoundly moved throughout this interview with the power of what he was saying. And then the subject matter is fascinating. Kaneoluma is one of the most important archaeological sites in all of Hawaii. It's a 14th century Hawaiian village. There's a Wai system here. There's a Malahiki Stadium. There's structures of all kinds. It was a large village. And it also has a he'iao, which they're in the process of restoring and preserving, and, you know, a fish pond, and many, many features. So from a Hawaiian cultural perspective, this is such an important piece of land with so many important treasures within it. And you can learn more at their website, kaneoluma.org. So we can hopefully share that throughout. And then Uncle Billy also talks about, you know, the land grab, that he's trying so hard to protect this land. And there's so many challenges that he's facing. So it's, I think it's an important interview for lots of reasons. This land that we're talking about is right in Poipu. You know, for people who are familiar with this place, this is like when you turn off the highway to get down to Poipu Beach, it's the plot of land on your left. If you're facing the sea. It's right there. And there's the Ka'e, the sort of the big totem poles that have been there in the past that are in the process of being restored right now. It couldn't be more central. You know, it's just right in the smack middle of the tourist zone.
Off of the highway, like off of Kamualii Highway, like by the tree tunnel, or are we talking farther down by Brenneke's area?
Yeah, by Brenneke, sorry. I mean the main highway.
That beautiful large road.
Poipu Road is what it is.
Yeah, okay. So we've all seen that. Like, I always drive by and go, it looks like so interesting, but I've never gone, you know, please don't go to it. But like, I was wondering, what is it? What is happening here? How do we react with it?
So there's signage there that you can read, which I would encourage everybody to just stop and check it out. Because again, stories build connections, not just with people, but with land. So you may drive past it 1,000 times, but if you know the story of the land, suddenly you're going to be interested in what's happening there. You might be a little bit in awe of what's happening there, and you might feel drawn to help protect it. So I do encourage people to stop and read the signs. It is a sacred site, a he'iao, so there's a traditional way to ask permission before entering. So I would encourage people to respect those traditions. But you can certainly go to where the signage is and read the signs, and, you know, be in the sort of the periphery of the space and get a sense of what's going on there, what is just under the surface.
Wow. And then they do have a website, and it's kaneoluma.org. Was that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And I'll spell that for us. It's kaneioluum, as in Mary, a.org. And if you have questions about that website, you can call me maybe around 11 o'clock and get more information about that. And I can hand it over to you on the line. So 826-7771 a little later on. And caller, if you're calling right now, I will get back to you a little bit later. So is there anything else that you'd like to say about this interview before we get started?
I just want to thank Uncle Billy for taking the time to speak with me. for taking the time to have this story recorded as part of Land Stories. You know, the whole idea of the Land Stories project was to be able to hear from diverse stakeholders, and perhaps no voice is more important than the voice of the Native Hawaiians who have cared for this land for hundreds of years. So I feel very honored and privileged that he was willing to speak with us, and I'm very moved by what he has to say, and I just ask people to show some respect and hopefully open your mind to what he's saying and get ready to learn, because he's filled with knowledge and beautiful spirit.
That is lovely. Well, I can't wait. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Kauai Community Radio, and I'm speaking with Angela Zussman, and she founded Story for All with the purpose of telling stories for healing and learning and preservation. And so we're about to listen to an interview with Uncle Billy Kauhelauli'i about Kaneoluma He'iau. And it's a pre-recorded interview, so there will be a little bit of background noise and a little bit of goings-on, but I know that it's very special, and you will love it. So, here we go.
Say and spell your name, please.
My name is Llewellyn Kauhelauli'i. Llewellyn. Kauhelauli'i. Kauhelauli'i.
Thank you. And what is your connection to this land right here? This land?
Well, I lived on this land almost all my whole life. Well, my whole life, anyway. We lived almost right next to the He'iau, Kaneoluma. But all my life I live here, and my family is from Poipu. And actually my grandfather and my mom, them was all living in Poipu. And then my grandfather, he was a fisherman, he was a sergeant of police. I mean, he used to take care of all the fish ponds and the waters, the waterways. But he was we would fish a lot. And then that's how we would survive, fishing and farming taro. And it's all down here was all taro patches and salt beds and fish ponds. That's how we went for our food. When I was young, my dad, he worked for this company, Kauai Commercial, on the west side. And then he would come home. We would go fishing and we would catch some fish for dinner. But that was almost everyday life, you know.
Can you tell me more about the farms that were here, and what were the years of the taro farms and sweet potato and things that you're talking about that were here? What years?
I think was way back. All that farming was back here, way back. You know, in the 1800s, because when they threw everybody out, I mean, all the Hawaiians left. The Kanakas, they left. And a lot of them, because they took the land away. And now, when they take the land away from you, and you become, they put us into a colony. We cannot fight back for our lands. And that was, I go, what? You know, now we're figuring them out. Well, you know, they took all our land. Now we don't have land. Now the youngest come up now. No land. This is the Kanaka Maoli land. I don't know what even we use this land maybe for the Kanaka people, because in the old days, this was all Kanaka people live here. It wasn't anybody else. And this was a Wili Wili Aupua. And right there has the wall, the division of the Aupuas, go from the mountain to the ocean. That was what we would do, just do a little farming in our own yard, you know, vegetables and stuff like that. And then coconuts, we eat a lot of coconuts. Except my dad taught me when I was young, you're hungry, right there, a coconut tree. Don't worry about anything. You just worry. You stay alive, you know. That's how I did it way back.
Tell me more about the farms that used to be here and how they could make a farm on lava.
Well, kind of like way back, you know, I know that the taro patches and sweet potatoes right back there. And then that went to the gold rush.
To
the gold rush in California.
Oh, the gold rush.
The gold rush. All that. This is way back now. It wasn't even my time. You know what I mean? But like I said, this whole place was fish pond. That's what, like our farm. You know, we take care of fish, we're going to eat the fish. And the potato, the sweet potato, and taro. That was our main dish, you know? But like I said, man, we had, in that piece of land there, had so much fruit trees, a lot of fruit trees, mangoes, oranges, Hawaiian oranges, lilikois, guavas, all kind of fruit.
And so the ships would come into Koloa Landing.
Right.
And the food, so mm-hmm. How did the food get from the farms to the ships?
Probably when they brought in the plantation people. Because when they brought in everybody, they had railroad tracks all over this place, you know? And then that's how they would get them down to the ship. We would put them on a track. Because I guess they had on track over here.
And how about water? Can you talk about the Hawaii system? It's dry, it's lava here.
Yeah.
So please talk to me about how the water came back in the long time ago. How did the Hawaiians able to...
The Hawaiians, in the old days, they somehow made their own Hawaii. Divide all the water, but mostly the water went to the taro patches and the fish ponds, because we'd go to the taro patch, feed the taro patch, then go in the fish pond. Then from the fish pond, supposed to go in the ocean, because that's where all our spawning go. But like I said, the farming, and then was all the way, all this whole area was farming, because they had the water coming this way. You know, they had on Hawaii. I remember that Hawaii. Diverted them all inside here, and it goes along these walls down here, and it goes under the wall. Then it goes to feed the taro patches.
And someone who doesn't know what Hawaii means, what does Hawaii mean?
Hawaii means the water that runs on the ground. And then you see, we make a Hawaii like that, like a Hawaii, and it's the water run right down the Hawaii.
So some time ago, how far back was the system created?
Way back. Gotta be in the 1800s, before. No, because this go way back to the 1200s. And, you know, like the chief, like I said, when my grandfather days, the chief, that's how we got our own land, to Eke Oponui, the chief. And he would say, you stay here, and if any comers come in, you let them stay. If they don't work, they gotta go. That's the Ahupua way, you know, the people first, then come the the Moku. You know?
Can you say more about that?
The Moku is the person that takes care of the Aupua from the mountain to the ocean. And he takes care of his people and whoever is around. And then, like I said, you gotta, when you come to the farming, either you work, you like stay there, you gotta work. And then if you don't work, you gotta go another place. But it's Aupua, you know, from the mountain to the ocean. And always by the ocean on a coastline, always get the springs. Like this place here, tons of water springs. I mean, springs, you would see that fresh water just coming out of the ground in the old days. Like had one spring over here, one water spring, was so much spring, so much water, whole water now, coming straight from on top of these mountains, all come off the mountain, come down to all these caves and all these waterways, and then they come to the Hawaii, feed all our tail patches and goes into the fish ponds. But like I said, this whole area was tail patch and fish ponds. This whole area.
And the
Aupua. It's from the land, the pie division of the land, from the mountain to the ocean.
And everybody understood.
Yeah, everybody knows. Everybody knows that if you go over there, you want to stay, and you know, because in the old days, you don't want to have a house. You know, you're in a little cave. You don't have a house, so whatever, you got to be either a fisherman or a farmer. In those days, was how you going to eat. So like I said, the people that want to live here, they got to live by the farm, where you can get food and where you can fish.
I'm asking you a lot about this because after this, the plantation system came.
Yeah.
There was, you know, one person or someone at the top.
Yeah.
They controlled everything and people were paid to work the land and they were given housing.
Right.
So how is that different from this system?
Well, from those old days, man, MacBride, well, they, all the immigration now. You're talking about everybody, not only one people. You had Chinese, you had Japanese, you had all kind of immigration. No, they took over this place. Nakanaka people just stand up. Wow, they're ruining our lives to feed the tail patches. The Kanakas are so bummed. When the people came in and ruined the whole chunk of lands and everything, and they allow the state, allow the people, the immigration to come in, like MacBride Plantation, they're all the big farmers now. I'm talking about the guys that took all the land. They took almost all the land. The farming, that was the MacBride and Plantation and all these people, they took, like now, we wanted to go check our hay house. You know, we got hay house not only over here, tons of hay house all over here. But every time they try to protect, you know, take our land away, we want to go malama the land to clean. They're not. You got to ask permission, but that's our land, you know. It's been changed so bad, it's beautiful. I don't know how our connectors will survive in a couple more years because they took all our land away. And they're not thinking of the youngers. It's so much youngers now. But today, you know, these kids can't afford living over here. It's too high a price. State of Hawaii, I don't know what they're doing to us, but this is us. No, all what I seen ain't gonna come back. Ain't coming back. But that's why we're protecting these areas right now before it's the ruin of them.
What do you want the keiki to know?
I want them to know that this place here is all kanaka and supposed to be preserved forever. You know, forever. Perpetuated. This guy's ruining all our land.
What would you do if you had this land to you? How would you nurture it?
Man, I really don't know, but I think I'm going to have to get a lot of people involved. If the state let it go with us, we take over. We get all Kanaka people together, you start going, man. Yeah, you take it easy, you get some people, you take it easy, you get some people, until you're done. If we can stay on our land, cannot believe it. You know, how much land we had and they just took them away. Pretty radical. I mean, you know, this is over hundreds of years. All the people was, all the lands and the people that was here, they took them away. And now who you think get the land? Who you think get the land? So they bought me out, you know. I'm a Kanaka Maole. My dad is from Nihau. He speak fluent. But I was amazed of his handwriting. That guy could write, man. Couldn't believe it. I don't know what school he went to, but he went to Nihau school.
And the He'iau here, the He'iau, like you said, all over this land.
All over.
What is the malama to take care of the He'iau?
To take care of the land.
And what does that mean exactly? Like if you were going to teach me,
yeah.
Just to say hypothetical, what would you be teaching me to do?
How to clean malama and care for the aina. That's the thing about it, because our foot is on this aina. We must malama our aina. It's what give back. You see, people don't understand it. The land give back. If you put it in, you put your work in, come back. That's why look all these trees here. We planted them 5-6 years ago. The thing are fruiting. It's all fruiting. That's what it is. Malama, care for the land. And plus, He'iau. There's people in there, yeah. There's graves in there. That's why we never like nobody going there and mess around. But because of the state and county, our land and the people raid our Moss Rock for all these millionaires down the road. There goes all our rock. That's our culture. They're destroying our culture. The state no care, the county no care, because they sell them. They sell the land. They're raiding the moss rocks to build what you call plantation homes, they say. Plantation homes. Because they get rocks over there in the beginning of the house. Yeah, but look, you're ruining our culture. They did that from way back. Nobody could stop them. Why is that?
This you saw with your own eyes?
Oh.
Can you tell me one memory that you have seeing this happen in front of you?
The rocks, the theft rocks. Every night they steal the rocks over here. They get big groups of gangs. They come in here, congregants. They're making millions of dollars off the culture rocks. Millions of dollars.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Kauai Community Radio, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. And we're listening to Land Stories from Story for All. It's an interview with Uncle Billy Kauhelauli'i about Kaneoluma He'iau down in Poipu. And let me play this important message.
NOAA's National Weather Service Climate Prediction Center predicts a near to above normal hurricane season in the Central Pacific Basin. Are you aware of the hazards of a hurricane? Hurricane winds above 74 miles per hour can damage or destroy buildings, homes, and infrastructure. storm surge is an abnormal rise of water generated by a storm's winds. Waves breaking along the coast can cause dangerous rip currents and damage to buildings, roads, and coastal infrastructure. Hurricanes produce torrential rainfall and flash flooding in inland areas. For information on keeping your ohana safe this year, keep tuning in to local media and visit www.kauai.gov/kema, K-E-M-A.
And thank you for listening to KKCR. And now back to our interview with Uncle Billy Kauhelali'i from Story for All.
UAMB, the house is millions and $10 million because of these moss rocks. That's why I'm so, like me, I live right in the heart of that. Every night I see that. I don't sleep. I cannot sleep. Every time I hear a rock move, I get up. I cannot. I gotta come out of there and chase them. That's what I do. It's my job now. I got a malama of the land, like I said. That's my kapunas there. My grandfather dies. This is their land.
And your future generations of your family, how are you passing off?
I get my kids, and I try to teach them everything I know. I teach them fishing, I teach them. They're all right. They're pretty good. I gave them my Hawaiian homelands. I said, I cannot live out there. I leave my father's land. Because my sister guys do take them and sell them. And if I sell my land here now, I am not. This is my roots. I cannot leave this place. It's my roots. I keep on telling my family, I'm not going to sell. My father said, nope, stay here till you die. One of the last father words, we stay here till you die. And that goes to me and my sisters, that house there, and my brother. So we had five. So all them Monte Manu, and one of them passed away already, but still, some of them wasn't on the title, And all of a sudden, everybody died, they're on the title. But it's because my sisters, they did it, as soon as my parents died, they did everything, and I'm there. Then it came for me because I'm a fisherman like my grandfather. I had nets all over this yard, I had things all over, like boats, that's what I was. I'm a fisherman, and I was a fisherman for a long time, till about 10 years ago. I hurt my leg. No, I don't want to even do that heavy work, too much work.
Excuse me, a little bit about Mahalapu, the place where Kaloa Sugar is, that land there.
Okay, now.
What happened on that
land?
Before the sugar mill.
Okay. That land there is all Kanaka land. That there, my grandfather owned a lot of land out there. And then they had a lot of taro patches. And that's where it was going good. Until this McBride would take the water. They divert the water. They diverted all the water. And so they would shut all the taro patches down there. They get small little taro patches, but they're not using, they get water pipe.
Did this affect your grandfather's ability to farm the land?
No. My grandfather, they just took them away from him. Like I said, these big time land grabbers? They took 100 acres from there. And right in Mahalapu, there was a prime land. And he had the spring water, he had everything on that land. But Mahalapu is the last of last beach that no more nothing on. Just get one house, but still, it's the last of last on Kauai. Mahalapu, they never touch yet. But still, now, the McBride thing they own over there, so they was using them for movies and all kinds of stuff. They still occupying that mill, which they supposed to have moved that and get out of there a long time ago, because the cane and pineapple is gone long time ago, but they never take them away. They never, you know what I mean? They just left it there till they use it and use it. Now they bring in companies in to use that place, like the okay, small little business. You want to use the hiking, and you know, Malapu is on pretty popular place. And plus, a lot of people never even see that place. Like my friends, I just brought them there. I said, wow. I said, see, on a stormy rain, it's the kind of place you gotta go, where nobody stay.
So there's a younger generation of people who are thinking about the land. They're thinking about how do we provide food for the people of Kauai, yeah. Right? Not just, you know, sugar to sell, corn
no,
to sell.
Okay.
So how about these, what up would you
there,
say?
That, cause up a, there had a lot of farming. Up there had a lot of farming. But you know what they did? It's McBride. They had all this honey bucket pumping. They dump them over there. Then they get the jail guys who farm them. Then everybody gets sick, eating them, shut down. Then all this goes in a ditch, stream, pollute the whole place, Malapu. Until now, it's been gone forever. And it, we was like, we was fighting for the water. See, they shut the water down, go to Mahalapu. You know, because there was all a farm. There was all a farm. And then, you know why? Like I said, they was using, dumping all the honey bucket. After so many months, the thing will dry up, they go plant. Then the people who eat them, they get sick. And I, they pissed. They were pissed because there was, we shut the Mahalapu down because they was gonna put a dairy there.
Put a what? A dairy.
A dairy. Yeah, this rich guy came in and he wanted to put a dairy out there.
Sugar mills.
Yeah.
In that same building?
Yeah, no, in a, it's further around there someplace though, anyway. But they wanted to put a nice dairy on there and we told them no. We don't want that. We live here. We can get all the flies, we can get everything, we can get the smell, everything. We never like it. So, what we did, we can go down the beach there and we get everybody's vote. Would you like dairy or not like dairy? I mean, we got the main people even. Like dairy or not like dairy? And then you should see how much they can try to push their dairy. Forever. And we kept on hanging in there, and we won them. I couldn't believe it, this millionaire. We won them on the dairy thing. I couldn't believe it, because we was with, I was, like I said, I was the moco for the area. I don't know if you know that.
Can you explain what that means?
The moco is the, like I said, I explained it earlier, it's the moco is the area, Ahaupua, and it take care of his people on that Ahaupua. That's what it means, moku. And the people, they're the one fight for, you know? And I gotta go fight in the big thing.
How is it that you attained this position, moku? Is it passed down in your family or?
No, it's because I was a moku for 8-10 years and then they shut it down when they had the pandemic. And then now they're coming back with that. It's just for help the Kanaka people, you know? I mean, they get the rights of their land.
What would you like to see happening on that land? Would you like to see small farms there? What would you like to see?
I don't know. Right now, it's so hard to, because, you know, then again, they're going to need water. They're going to need all kinds of stuff back there. It's pretty much back there. I really, you know, I don't think we're going to get water down there to feed all the farming. I would love that because it's all Hawaiian lands. I mean, Kaneka land.
And do you think that there are people here on the island, maybe younger people, who would like
to learn? We get them, the farmers. We farmers, they get them already.
Where?
Get the all young kids. Well, because I know a lot of people like to farm, especially now. Now you look at hard for buy food. That's why everybody like farm. That's why I told my fisherman, I tell him, yeah, well, you can fish all you like, but you need the hard vegetables. You need the vegetables.
So part of your vision would be for younger generation to be able to farm?
I like the young generation to step up, do what I do. You know, just care for the land and the people. You know, give more love of the land, especially Kanaka land. That's why I told a county guy and they was grumbling about me going in. Well, the whole thing about the county, they think they own everything. And he stepped back. I told him, well, you don't own nothing. We own all. So, the county guy, he was some kind of executive county for Parks and Recreation. And I told him, look, he's my grandfather's land. I don't care what you say. I will malama this land whether you like it or not. So, now he's the main guy for the county. He ended up calling me to come in there. If he like going there, he ended up calling me. I told him, you see, this is the way it's supposed to be. Not you guys think you guys own the land.
And when you say malama the land, I'm sorry for asking such a simple question, but if there was three things you could say, like what would be, like clean up the trash? Yeah.
No, clean.
Maybe like three things.
Yeah.
Show the young people, this is how you malama the land.
Yeah.
What would you say?
You got to clean the rock, clean all. Because a lot of stuff in there is not belonging there. It's just weeds growing. So you got to clean them all up. And then got to make sure you can get all these trees growing right, you know. And then the trees, I mean, it's a lot of work in there. But it's good for the schools, you know. Because we had a lot of schools coming here. Camp school, UH football team. We had the UH football team. We made them camp, but they was, you know, training.
So part of it is to clean it up,
right? Yeah.
And then number two maybe is make it so the trees can flourish, the trees can grow. What else?
No, and then we're gonna fix up all the walls in there because they've been raiding the walls and you know, so now we gotta protect everything. We gotta put them back. But we have some rocks and we're gonna fix them up. Because we got all of his group, get all our guys that do the walls and.
So I have probably a million more things I'd love to ask you, and I am thankful so much for the time already.
My
last question for you today, if you would, is what do you want people to know about the Kanaka? What do you want them to know about
these? I want them to know that this is Poipu. It's not, you know, all these crazy people not supposed to be like this, you know what I mean? We're supposed to be Poipu, but I don't know. I hate to see this place go. That's the thing. This place should stay forever. I don't know. I want them selling this place. Because the county cannot even pick up the rubbish. We've been working hard on this place. Every time we get a kickback, we took the keys, you know. And that was a thing for put them up and take them down. You gotta get them clean. But anyway, so far we're all good here, you know. We're trying our best to keep our lands, but all this, no matter what we do, we still firing away, man. They don't want to, you know, this is free land.
Well, the Hei'a, this place has, excuse me, it has great cultural significance to the Hawaiian people.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that important to the world?
Well, see, they gotta know that this is Kanaka land. This place is Poipu. It's the famous place right here. This is Hei'a. That's the one saving Poipu, or else they would have changed Poipu name already. Poipu is rolling boulders. That's what it means. Rolling boulders, Poipu.
And how is this, you know,
Poipu is the area right here as Poipu. But because of the rocks all in the front, you know, when waves hit them, they rip up the road, rip up the rock, rip everything up. That's why they made this road. Because that road, every time the coastline would beat them up with the high tides.
And we know this is the only genuine Hawaiian village still in existence. So can you just speak about the importance, the significance of that? Again, to Hawaii, but also to world culture. Like, why should people care?
We gotta care, because we gotta not, like I said, we care for the kapunas is there. That's the ones. And we do what they was doing. Malama the land. Take care. That's what they was doing.
Okay, and this really is my last question. What would this world be like if everyone took care of that land?
Oh, this place would be like heaven. I'm telling you, this is like God's country. And it's going to go. This is the only place left. And, you know, like I said, we're after that pandemic. Yeah, bringing millions of people. The road was so packed with people. And now they're trying to bring them all in. Get all these condos over here. I cannot handle too many people already. Look, it's going to take a long time for us to drive out of here. There's all this traffic and cars and, oh, man. But like I said, this here, yo, my grandfather's, that was their land. And when we used to live here, this land, you wouldn't believe it how far the land would go. That's what our land. But my house, all the way to Paris. But you wouldn't believe Sherrington in old days was beautiful fish bones. Beautiful. My grandfather used to take care of it. And my dad used to go. We used to go early in the morning, open the thing, let fish go back out. But otherwise, as the water waves.
Was there more fish back then?
Loaded fish. In my father's days, had so much fish. Like, as soon as I stopped fishing, already fish deplete. Because over here, they was catching all kind of fish. Small fish, big fish, you know. But like I said, Kaneoloma took the heart of me and my grandfather. And like, when I was young, me and my uncles used to hunt in here. They had pigs, they had all kinds of stuff in here. They came out from that mountain there, they came out for the fruits. Lily koi, guava, mango, tangerines. I mean, nails. And all through here, I had pigs. All through here. Everybody used to come, take guava, lily koi, make lily koi cake. But that was the young days. Now it's not, it's all gone. Everything is gone. Everything is downgrade, no more. That's why we gotta stick to our land, Mamai. That's why, once you get your own land, you go your own, you farm your own. I'm saying now, not before. Before, big farms, but now. to lead a farm. You don't have a big land, you know. Me, I got to grow money in my pockets. Don't grow my food. Everybody in Brooklyn, oh, how big that tomato tree? 6 feet. They look all red cherry tomato. Yeah, you see. So, bell peppers. That's how I survive now. Avocados, mangoes. I got them all in my yard. Got them all in my yard.
And you, your lineage, you're taking care of this land. Is there a blessing or something that you would like to offer for this land and for the future generations to take care of it?
Oh, yeah. That's why pretty soon when, you know, me and Rupi is older, we got to find the youngest to take step up because, you know, they're going to have to take care. Okay.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I hope you get enough. Right on, sister.
Thank you so much.
Right on.
Right on, sister.
And thank you for listening to Kauai Community Radio. We just heard an interview with Uncle Billy Kauhelauli'i about Kaneoluma He'iau, and that was from Story for All. And I've got Angela Zussman here with me on the phone to give us a conclusion for this interview. Are you there?
I'm here. Yes, I'm just reliving that moment. It was just so powerful, so sweet. I love his laughter. I mean, at the same time, it was heartbreaking. So many of the things that he was saying, you know, that he has experienced almost two different ways of life. And he sees what he called the, you know, the younger years, he sees them disappearing. It's hard to maintain hope. Mm-hmm. It's a changing of the tides. You know, with the land ownership, with the waterways, it's something that I hope people will become aware of when they're in Poipu, and, you know, visitors come and enjoy this beautiful place and the beautiful beaches, and I would just encourage them to go to the He'iau, visit Kaneoluma, spend some time digging into and learning about the history here, the culture, the traditions. There's more here, so much more here than just beautiful beaches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is a way of life and a way of being. And I was interested in his kind of his commentary on how the maybe the local government is a little contrary to what he's trying to do or what traditions have dictated. He was very adamant about that, it seems. And I was also very, very hit with the need for farming and growing our own food, and how it happened down there in Poipu. We look at it like it's all deserty and dry and everything, but it was very fertile and very possible to do.
It was because of the intricate Hawaii systems, water systems that were constructed by the Hawaiians masterfully. That are still, many of them are still in place. And then, depending on who you ask, you know, the plantations did a lot to help with the water systems. In some cases, they diverted it away. But they really did invest an enormous amount of money into the water infrastructure to ensure that there would be enough water for all of the crops, all of the farms. And we are now at a major crossroads because these water systems, now that the plantations are no longer functioning, there's no one caring for the water systems. They're in increasing disrepair. Development has, you know, dynamited through a lot of the Hawaii systems. And there's a real risk that people, homeowners, landowners, farmers, whoever, will no longer have access to fresh water in the years to come. So this is a major, major issue here in Kauai and the Hawaiian Islands. And we're not alone, of course, around the world having some of these water issues, but this is a critical moment here in Kauai. So So one of the benefits of this oral history project has been lifting up the need to do something right now about the water systems. So this is something that we are exploring further with some of the stakeholders that we were fortunate enough to meet through this storytelling project.
Okay, so I'm interested in how that progresses as well. I know that with the small farms down on that side of the island, farming everywhere, water is a big issue, but just getting enough with how dry the summer was this summer and how, you know, we typically don't water a lot of the crops because it's just going to rain, you know, but now we've been watering grass just to feed animals and, you know, it is going to be an increasingly important thing as the world gets drier and the climate changes and stuff like that.
And we definitely heard that, like I said, from all of the interviewees. And the truth is that the island of Kauai gets way more water than it can use and way more water than it needs. So all we need is an infrastructure, which the ancient Hawaiians created, to make sure the water gets where it's needed. We have enough water, but we need the infrastructure and the systems to ensure it gets where it's needed. And we humans need to act now because that system is in disrepair.
Did you, in your land stories, did you come across anyone with ideas for advocacy or like, hey, who should I call to say, hey, we got to work on the water, or how can we help with the water infrastructure, or who do we talk to? Did you come across any of those ideas?
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm not exactly sure how much I can say, but one thing I can encourage is for people to call their county council members, call your politicians, reach out to your politicians and ask questions. You know, what's going on with our water? You know, who is controlling our water? Where will we get access? So now is the time, you know, just find out, you know, do you know where your water comes from in your home, in your farm? Do you know where it comes from? Do you know that the dams are all being potentially decommissioned right now and what's going to happen to the water? So most people are unaware that the water system is in such a risk at this moment. And so I would encourage people to get information, to call your politicians and demand answers. Because this is the power we have in a democracy, right? We speak up, we tell our politicians what it is that we need and we want, and they take action. But if we don't say anything, maybe they're going to focus on other problems. So I highly encourage people to become informed and call your local politicians, call your county council members, tell them that this is a concern that you have, ask them questions, you know, demand that they take action. That's what I would recommend.
For sure. And if you need access to these phone numbers or email addresses, you can go to kauai.gov, www.kauai.gov, and you can find everything about the county infrastructure, the county people. They have strategic plans on there. They have FEMA. They have all the stuff there. And if you can't find what you're looking for, give me a call in the office at 826-7774 up here at KKCR, and I can help you find the phone number that you're looking for advocacy.
Thank you. And also, if people are interested in helping with the preservation of the Kaneoluma site, the Hawaiian village, the Heiau, this is something else to speak to your politicians about and county officials. You know, show people that you care, that it matters to you. And that's going to perhaps motivate action on their part.
And to learn more about the Kaneoluma Heiau, you can go to kaneoluma.org. Kaneoluma.org. It's Kaneioluma. And if you need more about that, also give me a call here at 826-7774, and I can connect you with that as well.
Perfect. People can also, if they want to hear the interview again, I know that you're going to put it in the archives, thank you, on your website. And they can also visit the Story for All website. We have the videos of some of the interviews there on the website, so you can see Uncle Billy, you know, you can spend more time with this and some of the other interviews for the project, and we also have links on our website where people can get more information. So that is storyforall.org. And I want to also thank the Hawaii Council for the Humanities for their generous support of this project, along with National Endowment for the Humanities, making it possible for us to do this oral history project, preserve these stories, and create access to the public to this really important content.
Fantastic. And again, Angela, thank you so much for joining us on Kauai Community Radio. Thank you for sharing your stories and your passion for storytelling with us on the air here at KKCR. This stuff is super important to us. It's important to our listeners, and it's just really good radio. Thanks.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, and we look forward to being with you again the last Friday of November.
Yes.
We have a very interesting interview lined up, very different type of interview, but a really interesting snapshot into farming in Kauai over the last century or so.
Yes.
I hope everyone will join in.
Yeah, and Angela will be joining us the last Friday of every month here on Talk Story Radio, sharing land stories with us. And then at every other Friday, we're going to have something about the land on Kauai. Next Friday, on November 3rd, we're going to be speaking with Bill Fernandez, Hawaiian author. He is 91 years old, still publishing books, and he is going to be talking to us about growing up here during World War II on the east side and on Kauai, and that'll be a just very interesting interview. He'll read some excerpts from his books, and we'll just talk to him and kind of glean some knowledge from him as well. We'll also be talking on the 17th with friends of King Kamualii about the site Paʻulaʻula out on the west side, formerly known as the Russian Fort. It's been recaptured and kind of branded the way that it should have been before as Paʻulaʻula. And they're having a ceremony and a talk with the archaeologists that have been looking into King Kamualii's life. We'll be talking with those folks on the 17th. So, Angela, thank you for getting this whole thing started off, as we're going to...
Great lineup.
...be learning so much cool stuff about our land on Kauai, and I'm so thankful. Thanks for kicking it all off for us. So...
Oh, my goodness. My pleasure. I will be tuning in the next few Fridays as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I will talk to you, Angela, soon. And I'm going to do some station business, and we'll get back to some Hawaiian music. Thank you so much, Angela.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Aloha.
Aloha.